On the Bookshelf with your host, Dave Doug Kirby.
I am delighted to welcome to On the Bookshelf today an author who is addressing an issue that happens in more and more older congregations. And I know this because I was a pastor for 29 years in small membership congregations, usually rural, and most of them had active membership of under 40 people. And what starts to happen when you get smaller is that the tendency is to get insular. If you're not careful, you just shrink away and shrink away until the last one turns off the light. But in this particular book, in this particular case, people from a church that was diminishing had an opportunity to do something startling and unusual, and because of that, they revitalized the congregation and reached people who had previously not been reached for the gospel. The book is The Unlikely Yarn of the Dragon Lady. The author is Sharon Mondragon. It is from Craigle Publications. She is the facilitator for a prayer shawl ministry and the knitting instructor at U2 Yarn, that's E-W-E, 2 Yarn, near her home in Midlothian, Texas. She's been a school play therapist, a homeschooling military wife, and the author of this marvelous new novel. So, Sharon, thank you very much for joining us today on the Bookshelf.
Well, thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Well, my wife knits and does crochet and a lot of different things, and so I promised her that after I talked to you that I would let her read the book. But before that, I needed to make sure I had it close at hand so that I could refer to it during the interview. This is quite a very cool idea. Did anything like this ever happen at a church where you were involved in a knitting ministry or anything?
Well, no, actually, it grew out of my own experience. At my husband's final duty station in Augusta, Georgia, I was once again the new girl at church at Holy Comforter there in Martinez, Georgia. And I thought a really great way to make friends would be to join the prayer shawl ministry. And their prayer shawl ministry was unusual in that when the pastor was approached to, can we have a prayer shawl ministry, she said yes. But you can't meet here in the church. You have to meet in public. So I believe it was Wednesday or Tuesday, we would meet in the cafe of a local health food store. And people would stop by and ask us what we were doing or tell us about someone they knew and loved who had knitted or crocheted. And we really were out in the community being a calm and cozy presence in the world.
It's really a lovely idea. First of all, the idea that something that usually is organized to be a way for members of the congregation who have an interest in knitting or making things with their hands to get together. So there is a fellowship aspect to it. But this pastor in your novel, just like that pastor, saw the opportunity for evangelism in something that probably was not the first thought of the people that were in the prayer shawl knitting group is, hey, let's see how this will help us reach the unsaved out in the world.
Absolutely. They had absolutely no idea of doing that before their pastor broached the idea, and some of them weren't too thrilled about it.
So that's echoed in the members of the group in your novel, The Unlikely Yarn of the Dragon Lady. One of them in particular, the leader of the group, is absolutely outraged and furious that they are being essentially kicked out of the church property to go hang out with people in a place that she never goes, and certainly it'll be noisy, and she'll be annoyed at being there, and she's unhappy that the others aren't unhappy about it too.
Yes.
Your real group, did it sort of reflect this group? I'm not going to ask you to name names, although I don't think I have any listeners in Georgia, but
probably my only inspiration for a character from the group was Rose. Okay. I had a very, very dear friend in my group in Georgia who just gave off the same vibe that Rose did, and it was just wonderful just to sit next to her and knit. But as far as there being someone like Margaret, that grew out of my own desire to understand people who are bossy. Margaret is quite bossy. And I've always wondered, well, why do those women feel so comfortable telling people what to do, directing their lives, and always figuring out a way to get their own way. And so I was exploring that idea because I'm not generally a bossy person. And I discovered a lot. I discovered that not all bossy women are the same. They don't all have the same motivation. And I found in the end, when I got to the core of Margaret, because the book was an exploration of her, I didn't have her figured out when I started, I realized that she and I were not so very different.
I think that's the way that most of us are with people when we have disagreements with others, because we assume that everybody thinks the same way we do. In a sense, this is the heart of, not to plug somebody else's book, but Gary Smalley's The Five Love Languages. That's the whole point of the book, is not everybody sees life the way you do, and it's okay if they don't. They may have very good reasons for thinking the way they do, and we need lots of different kinds of people in the world to get things done. Margaret is one of those people that makes sure things get done. She's the one that you want in charge of the lifeboat when the Titanic is going down. But she's not always fun to be around. If it isn't done exactly the way that she had planned for it to be done, she either sulks or she complains, and she makes everybody else as miserable as she can in the hopes that maybe they will change their mind and agree with her that her way is the best.
Describe it.
And I'm not going to give too much away here, so if I am, you say, no, we're not going to say that. She's not the only dragon lady in the book.
That's true.
And that's true. As much as we'll say about that. I don't want to give away that twist, which is really a delightful twist. We find out a lot about Margaret in this book, but we also find out about the others, about Sweet Rose, about Jane, about Fran. All of them have kind of a different reason for being a part of this group, but as it develops, if we get to the point where I'm giving too much of the plot away, you just say, okay, we're going to stop right there.
All right.
I love the fact that people start coming up to them in this little eatery and asking about them. And when they find out that they are ladies from a church, they ask, would you pray for us? All of a sudden, what started out as being four women who are getting to know each other better by knitting together prayer shawls, and now all of a sudden they become a prayer circle as well. Margaret isn't necessarily happy about that, but the others are thrilled, right?
Yes, yes, especially Rose.
Do you feel like this is sadly probably not all that far away from reality, that in a situation like this where people kind of have an idea that, okay, this is our purpose, this is our goal, this is in our bylaws, or if we had bylaws, this would be in the lead, and all of a sudden that changes. Isn't that just what God always does?
It is. He is constantly asking us to step out of our comfort zones. A lot of times we ignore him because we want to be comfortable. We want to feel competent at what we're doing. But if you look at the scripture, you see that many people were called out of their comfort zone. Mm. Abraham was called to go, well, he didn't know where, but he went anyway. And Esther was called to move out of her Hebrew family to go live in the palace of a pagan king. He's always asking us to step out of our comfort zones and trust him.
Tell us a little bit about prayer shawls for people who are unfamiliar with the term, trying to figure out exactly what it means to make a prayer shawl.
A prayer shawl is a shawl that's knitted or crocheted or woven. I know some weavers who make them. For people who are going through a difficult time, they may be bereaved, they may be ill, they may be going through some other sort of a difficult time. And the person who makes it prays while they make it. And then once it's finished, a lot of times it's taken to church, and the pastor and the congregation will also pray over it. And then it's given to someone in one of those situations. And the intention is that it's like a hug from God. God is spirit, but we're corporal. And there are times when we just need a God with skin on, something that we can touch, something that we can feel. And from the time of our birth, humans feel comforted by having something wrapped around them. And so this is something that you can wrap around you that brings to you a tangible sense of the presence of God.
That is absolutely lovely. Do you want to tell us more about the other members? We've mentioned Rose. We've mentioned Margaret. What's going on with the other two members, with Jane and Fran?
Well, Fran has been very suddenly bereaved 18 months before the story starts. Her husband had just retired, and she was very excited to be able, for them to spend time together. He'd been a very busy man, and she was thinking, at last, he's going to have time for me. But he had a heart attack. She had been planning a cruise to celebrate his retirement, and then suddenly she was planning his funeral. Mm. And she has been lost in the fog of grief. She's just starting to come out of that fog of grief.
Yeah.
And one of the good signs of it is that she's actually taken an interest in learning how to knit. And then Jane is younger, and she has three teenagers, Kenny, Anna, and Emily. Kenny's 19, Anna's 15, and Emily is 13. She is estranged from Kenny. He doesn't live at home. I'm not going to tell you anything more about him, but right. He has done something that has hurt her deeply.
Yes.
And she's estranged from him. And Rose urges her to forgive him, reminding her, you're going to have to forgive him someday. And her response is, I don't think he could ever be sorry enough for me to be able to do that.
Hmm. I liked this character very much because there are a lot of people out there who are very devout and they have a big jagged hole in their heart. It's been broken so badly and they trust that God will heal it, but they're not quite ready for it to be completely healed because the pain is so deep and the hurt is so overwhelming.
But I feel very, very strongly about the importance of forgiveness.
Mm.
It's in the Lord's Prayer. It's something that was so important that Jesus put it in there. And I pray it every single day, knowing that in some cases it's not true yet, that I'm not being obedient yet. But it's very, very important to work toward that. And I think it's all right to be able to admit, I'm having trouble with this.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's not okay to cross your arms and say, I will never, if you belong to God.
Right. We're not really given that option. We are to forgive as Christ has forgiven us. And since he had so much more to forgive than we do, we have to realize that we are capable of forgiving, but we have to do it in his power. Because sometimes forgiveness is extremely hard, but we can still do it if we ask for God's strength in doing so. And when we do this, it frees us and opens our hearts for forgiveness and restoration.
Yes.
We're talking, in case you're just joining us, to Sharon Mondragon, who is the author of The Unlikely Yarn of the Dragon Lady, a new novel. It's from Craigle Publications. And I neglected to mention earlier that she is serving as the facilitator for the Prayer Shawl Ministry at her church, which is St. Paul Episcopal.
Waxahachie.
Texas.
Yes.
You also knit with the Circle of Healing at Red Oak United Methodist Church, as well as being a Level 2 certified knitting instructor through the Craft Yarn Council, and you teach beginning knitting at a local yarn store. So when you write about the complexity of certain types of knitting in the book, I'm reading it and thinking, okay, I've heard my wife talk about this before, but these are not things, you're not making this stuff up. This is real knitting stuff. So people who like to knit can read this and go, oh, she knows what she's talking about. And people like me who don't knit can still enjoy it and say, wow, isn't that amazing that there are different types of ways of creating a particular look while you're knitting. I found that really interesting.
Oh, I'm so glad.
Do we want to talk about why Margaret is so focused on doing things her own way? I know we don't want to give away too much, but it is a novel and we don't want to spoil things, but can we just say that she also suffered a great, great deep hurt?
She did. And part of her drive to control is because she doesn't trust God because of that deep hurt. And she's using that control to keep God at arm's length.
Yeah. And part of that is why she doesn't want to leave the confines of the church building. They've been meeting in the prayer chapel, and then there's going to be some renovation. And basically the pastor says, so go find somewhere else. And she's furious at him for this, right?
Yes. Yes. Because he stipulates that it has to be in public. They can't go meet at somebody else's house.
The people that they run into, and can we say that they start out in this little store, in this little eatery, and they get kicked out by the manager and end up on a bench in front of a much bigger department store. This is in a mall, I'm assuming.
Yes.
And it turns out that this makes them even more visible, and they get more and more response from the workers in the different businesses in the mall, and they start connecting with people that are, for most of these women, so much younger than they are, and with whom they would, at first, particularly Margaret, is a little put off by the hair and the tattoos and clothing of these much younger workers. But over time, they begin to see beyond the appearance and start to see into their hearts, don't they?
Yes. Also, they become much more aware of the needs and wants of people that they wouldn't ordinarily come in contact with.
Has this been also your experience with the prayer groups, the prayer shawl groups and the knitters groups that you work with?
The group that I facilitate meets at a coffee shop in Waxahachie on Friday afternoons, and people do stop by and tell us about someone that they knew and loved who knitted or crocheted. We haven't gotten the prayer requests. I would really love that. I think maybe we need to have a sign on our table that says, we will pray for you. Because I really would like to have that element in our group.
I found that to be such a wonderful element in your novel, The Unlikely Yarn of the Dragon Lady, because more and more, in a sense, in fact, this is one of the things that Margaret complains about at first, that we're here to knit, and all these people keep coming up and wanting us to pray for them. You know, why don't they pray for themselves? That kind of attitude. And without pointing any fingers at any members of any church anywhere, I feel like this is not an unrealistic expectation of some members of the church, particularly ones like Margaret who are keeping God at arm's length and that don't really want to be drawn into caring about other people, because that just complicates their life and they don't want their life any more complicated than it is. That's not the way Margaret's husband sees it. He's kind of happy about this new development.
Yes.
You've worked with a couple of different knitting ministries at different churches. How difficult is it to get one started at a congregation? Do you just put the word out and say, any ladies who knit, meet with me at this particular time or something?
Well, I was really thrilled that recently a friend of mine that I knew when we were stationed in San Antonio contacted me and said, I want to start a prayer shawl ministry at my church. What do I do? And all she basically had to do was put the word out. And she wanted to know, well, who supplies the yarn? And I said, well, sometimes a church will give you an allowance. Sometimes people will donate. At my church, there's a donation process. And it's been very successful, this group that my friend recently started. Also, the two ladies who originally started Prayer Shawl Ministry have put out several pattern books. And in those books, it will tell you how to start a prayer shawl ministry.
This book has been published by Craigle in this year, but this book is not a brand new book in the sense that you just finished it in January and it got published a few months later.
That's true.
So this was a winner, right?
Yes. It won the 2017 ACFW, that's American Christian Fiction Writers, Genesis contest in the short novel category.
I can understand it. It is really such a sweet and fascinating novel. When I first got it, I thought, oh, maybe I should just let my wife read this. It's going to be about knitting. But I trust the publicist that sends me books. And I said, well, let's take a look at this. And after a couple pages, I got kind of hooked. And my wife, Becky, said, hey, are you going to let me read that? And I said, well, why don't you let me finish it first? And I'll let you know if you're going to enjoy it or not, because sometimes we do that with novels. And she said, okay. And last week she said, I know you're finished with that book. When are you going to let me read it? I said, I get to interview the author. So it's very soon, honey. So I've got to say that it is a really charming book, but I particularly love the idea that these women are, in some cases, like Margaret, reluctantly evangelist, and in the case of the other ladies, enthusiastically evangelist, and reach out and is it fair to say that it becomes successful, that these young ladies and men whose lives are being cared about by the members of this prayer shawl / prayer group start coming to church, start being involved, and the church is growing, and the pastor is delighted, and the bishop is happy.
Yes, and it's not so much that this was this sweeping revival where people are flooding into
Hope
of Glory Community Church. It's one person at a time. And they don't even necessarily, quote, witness to them about salvation. There's that saying that says people don't care how much you know until they know how much you care.
Yeah.
And that's the most powerful evangelism, when people are cared about as people that God loves, not a notch in your witnessing belt.
Right. I have to say that one of the things that I constantly struggled with as a bivocational pastor was people would come up to me with a list of people. You know, members of the congregation would come to me with a list of people. You need to go see these people. They're not coming to church. We think they should. And I would ask them. At first I didn't, because I was too green and too wet behind the ears. And I thought, oh, yeah, sure, okay. And then after a while I began to realize, wait a minute, how long have you known these people? Oh, they live next door to me. And I'd say, do you really think they're going to respond more to me, some guy walking in off the street they've never met before, they don't know who I am, and I invite them to church? Or do you think they're going to respond better to you, who have known them for 30-something years, and invite them to come to a concert at the church or something like that? I'm not going to avoid them, but don't you think you've got a better chance of success in this than I do? And they were always surprised, but most of the time they said, well, okay, I'll invite them. Because that is how we come to Christ, isn't it? Somebody cared enough about us to invite us to come to church for one reason or another, and that's where we heard the word. And if we don't get them there, there's a lot of media out there that can help. That's sure, that's true. But if we don't invite them, they're not going to feel invited.
Yes, and there also has to be that sense of acceptance.
Mm-hmm.
Because for the longest time, the evangelistic model, the thing that people who don't come to church think they have to do is they think they have to behave first.
Yeah.
And then they can go to church, and then they believe, and then they belong.
Right.
My pastor has said, it's really not that order. It's belong, believe, behave.
Right.
That there's that sense of belonging, and then the belief grows out of that. And then the change in behavior, the change in heart, comes as a result.
And I would be remiss if I did not do this. I should have done it right up front, to say that this novel is set in the Advent season. And
yes.
And that's why I delayed talking to you, because I read your novel a couple of months ago. But the reason that I waited to talk to you is that I wanted to use this interview as we were in the Advent season. Not because it is only applicable then, but because it is particularly appropriate then, when we have a great opportunity to share the love of Jesus with people, because it's all around us at Christmas time. And people are curious, and why do they call it Christmas instead of something else? And who is the baby in the manger? And this gives us openings that we don't have the rest of the year. So for folks that say, I dislike all the commercialization, I say, no, that can be a useful tool as well to open dialogue with people who might not normally talk to you about their religious faith.
Yes, I think people's hearts are more open at Christmas time than at any other time.
Yeah, yeah. This is really a marvelous book, and I really,
you.
Oh yeah, I really hope that lots and lots of people will read it and be inspired by it. to start their own prayer shawl ministry or knitting ministry or something out of the ordinary and do it outside the confines of the church buildings to reach out into the community and make them feel welcome. And when they do come to church, don't say, oh, well, I wish you hadn't worn that skirt, or, you know, have you thought about dyeing your hair back to the regular color, or can you hide your tattoos, or any of those kind of things, but just say, I am so happy you're here. Come sit next to me.
Exactly. Exactly. Something you might find interesting
is
that I actually finished writing the first draft of the book in Montgomery.
No kidding. Wow.
My husband had gotten out of the military, and we were waiting on getting his Texas medical license, because when you're in the military, you can practice at a federal facility with a license from any state.
Right.
We were waiting on that, but he still wanted to work, so we did a locum tenens at the VA in Tuskegee.
Okay.
And the company put us up in Homewood Suites in Montgomery. And I had no responsibilities during that time besides writing.
Yes.
And so that's where I finished the first draft of the book.
Wow. That is very cool. You know, that's only 45 minutes north of here. So people travel from Troy to Montgomery all the time. There are a lot of people that work in Montgomery. So that's a very close connection to us. That's lovely. Thank you. Do you want to tell people your website or any kind of anything like that, that they can contact you after they've read the book?
Yes, my website is www.sharonj.com. SharonJMondragon.com. I'm sorry. Shall I say that again?
That's okay. Is that J like the initial or J A Y?
Yes, J like the initial.
Okay, and Mondragon. All right, .com.
And I'm on Twitter.
Oh, okay.
At capital S, capital J, _ Mondragon.
Facebook?
It would be Sherry Mondragon.
Okay.
Sherry.
Thank you very much. And wonderful, wonderful novel. Please write more. Please, even if you don't have the same cast of characters, please write another book, because you have a wonderful touch.
Oh, thank you. I hope I do get asked to the dance again.
Thank you again for being with us today on The Bookshelf.
Well, thank you for having me. It was wonderful.
Our thanks again to Sharon Mondragon. Her new book, The Unlikely Yarn of the Dragon Lady, a novel from Craigle Publications. And you can find her on Facebook at Sherry Mondragon. You can also find her website at SharonJMondragon.com and on Twitter at capital S, capital J, _ Mondragon. That's MONDRAGONE. Thanks so much for joining us. We'll see you next time right here on your favorite radio station and your favorite podcast on thebookshelf.podbean.com. Until then, I'm your host, Dave Dockert. Thanks for listening, and God bless.